the studios of KPCW in Park City, it's This Green Earth, a weekly talk show about the environment and our relationship with it. I'm Nell Larson.
And I'm Chris Cherniak. Thanks for tuning in. You know, Nell, last week, Scripps Institute of Oceanography announced that the Keeling Curve, the long-term atmospheric measurement of carbon dioxide that alerted the world to human-induced climate change, will receive $1 million in continued funding from philanthropists Eric and Wendy Schmidt. Joining us to talk about this funding and its impacts is Dr. Jyotika Vermani. She's the executive director of Schmidt Ocean Institute out of Palo Alto, California. Dr. Vermani, thanks for joining Nell and myself on This Green Earth.
Thank you for inviting me.
A lot to discuss. I thought we'd start here. Give us a little description on what the Schmidt Ocean Institute is all about.
Yeah, we're funded by Eric and Wendy Schmidt. We began in 2009, and we are a nonprofit, obviously, organization, and we have a research vessel called the Falkor, which we offer at no cost to oceanographers, scientists, as well as those who develop technology around the world, along with some other assets, like a very sophisticated underwater robot that can go down to 4,500 meters beneath the sea surface, for them to do research. And in exchange, we ask that they make their data freely available and quickly available to the world to really help push forward our understanding of the ocean.
Okay, so you're very much ocean-based. Carbon dioxide is a gas in the atmosphere. What is the connection there?
Yeah, so in addition to the $1 million for the Keeling Curve, actually, Eric and Wendy Schmidt, through the Schmidt Ocean Institute, also have funded the ocean carbon Keeling Curve, so the ocean component to this, for $450,000 for the next 5 years. And as we know, the ocean and the atmosphere are very much intertwined and connected. And so as CO2 levels, carbon dioxide levels, increase in the atmosphere, the ocean is actually taking up some of that. And so we see an increase in carbon dioxide in the ocean as well.
So you briefly mentioned the Keeling Curve. Tell us what the Keeling Curve is.
Yes, the Keeling Curve was started by a chap named Charles Keeling back in the 1950s, and he made observations, measurements of carbon dioxide. Back in the 1950s, he was doing it at two locations. One was in Hawaii on the Mauna Loa Observatory, and the other one was in Antarctica. But because of funding issues, he continued the one in Hawaii and had to stop the one in Antarctica. But it's a long time series of carbon dioxide measurements, and it's really shown how carbon dioxide changes in the atmosphere from not only from season to season, which was one of the first really interesting measurements that was so consistent, but also from year to year, how CO2 has been changing and increasing.
Right, and just to give people a sense of how that concentration has been changing, it's increased first generally 47%, let's say, let's round up, almost 50% since the start of the Industrial Revolution, which was roughly 150 years ago. So back then it was around the upper 200s part per million. As of today, because I went on NOAA's website and saw this, it is at 415 parts per million. Since 2000, around 2000, it was at 370 parts per million. This is, again, carbon dioxide concentrations in the atmosphere. Now it is at 415, which is roughly another 18% increase just this century. And Dr. Vermani, you would say that this has been an increase on an annual basis?
Yes, definitely an increase on an annual basis. It's it does look like, it's increasingly increasing. So the rate at which it's increasing is going up as well.
Oh, so that would, to explain that, that let's say it was increasing one part per million per year back through the 90s and early 2000s. Now it's increasing 1.5 and maybe even 2 parts per million per year.
Something like that. So it's also, you know, like the curve has recently got a little steeper.
Yeah. Okay.
Which is troublesome, of course.
Yeah, it's very troublesome because we're experiencing climate. You know, people were talking about what might happen come 2020 back in 2000 and 2005. And I can honestly say that we're experiencing climate change now here in Park City. This is one of the warmest summers we've had. This is one of the warmest Septembers and now October and driest Octobers we've had. I think we're experiencing climate change. I don't know, you know, that's still up for conjecture. But this is a result of increasing levels of carbon dioxide and, as we talked in with our first guest, increasing levels of methane in the atmosphere.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, correct.
Sorry about my rant, but I can't. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you know, for climate, we need a few years of data. And that's what's so important about the Keeling Curve, is it's not just 1 year or 2 years. It's over a very long period of time, and it's consistently the same location. So you don't have, you know, variations. It's on top of, you know, the Mauna Loa Observatory, because that's a location that's far removed from pollution and you know, not a lot of plant life there to influence it. So it truly is a measurement of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere.
One thing that we were curious about is, given, you know, the importance of this Keeling Curve and the long-term data collection at this point, you know, why did the federal funding for this research end? And, you know, why are we now looking at private funding for this data collection?
So I can't really speak to the federal side of this. I do know that they increased or they added new measurements around the world. So it's not just, you know, at one or two locations now. It's really observations globally. So I think that's what the federal funding is continuing to support. To us, this is it's such a scientifically important location to continue to make measurements at, because it has had such a long time series. It would be a shame to stop that. And it's also of historical importance, obviously, this location, because it really, as you said at the front, Chris, of this segment, it's really alerted the world to the warming and the CO2 increase.
Okay, so you're saying that the monitoring of carbon dioxide is being done at other locations around the world. This is kind of the sentinel location, though, up on Mauna Loa. So is observations of carbon dioxide being observed in, say, the southern half of the hemisphere?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I believe they've started to do that. And as I said, you know, Charles Keeling originally had some in Antarctica, but had to stop due to funding issues. But yes, they've got southern hemisphere observations. And now, you know, since the 1980s, he actually also started the Keeling Curve for the ocean, so making measurements in the ocean of how CO2 was changing.
Let's talk a little bit more about that. So how quickly does kind of the ocean absorb these increased levels, and how much of a lag is there with kind of the ocean following the atmospheric levels?
That's a really, really good question. And this whole area is still very much under, you know, a research topic, because we've got observations. We know they're changing, but there's so much yet unknown about the ocean and how and where pollution is coming from. So the locations that we're funding, again, they're remote. One is off Hawaii and one is off Bermuda. So trying to be representative of the Pacific and the Atlantic Ocean, at least, in a remote location. but how fast it's changing in response to atmospheric CO2, that I don't actually know the answer to.
But does it reach a saturation point in the ocean?
Yeah, what it does in the ocean is it starts to actually damage marine life. So calcium carbonate structures, which kind of like are, you know, the skeletons, they have difficulty in maintaining their health. And some of these things are the base of the food chain, essentially. So the implications for, and it's called ocean acidification, by the way, this increase of CO2 in the ocean. The implications for that, as far as it concerns the rest of marine life, are huge.
If you're just joining us, we're speaking with Dr. Jyotika Vermani, the executive director of Schmidt Ocean Institute out of Palo Alto, California. We're talking about the institute, but specifically also the Keeling Curve, which recently received a private funding of $1 million from philanthropists Eric and Wendy Schmidt. Just to go back to that, a concept of CO2 getting into the oceans and being absorbed by the oceans, it's not that CO2 is replacing oxygen and the oxygen levels are falling in the ocean. It's literally that the CO2 gets converted into carbonic acid, which then, as you say, creates acidification, which has a huge knock-on effect on the chemistry and the biology of the ocean.
That's absolutely right, Chris. That is the process that is occurring, and it's been seen in various parts of the world. But again, until relatively recently, the way that, you know, scientists would collect these observations is they would sail in a vessel, go out, collect a water sample, bring it back to the lab, and do the analysis in the lab. And it's very laborious and expensive to do that kind of stuff. So recently, you know, in the last 5 years or so, we now have technology sensors that have been developed that are lab quality that can do this. So we can start to make more continuous observations.
And most notably, we're seeing acidification occurring in a number of reefs and coral reefs around the world, or I'll say again, most notably the Great Barrier Reef, which is experiencing repeated events of bleaching. Is that correct?
Yeah. So especially the Great Barrier Reef. Yeah, I think this year it had its third largest bleaching event in the last 5 years. So it's a really sad story, that, because that's an iconic system. But coral reefs are also hugely biodiverse. They're like the rainforest on land. So essentially the underwater rainforest, i.e. the coral reefs, are dying. And some of that is also because of temperature, so warming temperatures. It's interesting because our vessel, the Schmidt Ocean Institute's vessel, the RV Falkor, is actually doing live dives from the Great Barrier Reef right now, this month. So anyone can go onto the Schmidt Ocean YouTube and watch and see what the scientists are seeing for the first time ever off and around the Great Barrier Reef.
I'm doing that. That's fantastic.
We saw sharks yesterday. It was great, amongst a lot of other things.
Well, you know, I want to get to a little bit, too, some of the other work that Schmidt Ocean Institute is doing, because I was reviewing your website, which is fantastic, by the way. There is something you discovered. I believe you guys discovered. It's called the siphonophore. This is stepping away from the Keeling Curve right now, but this is so fascinating. Is that the right pronunciation? And what is that?
Yes, the siphonophore. So this was actually found on a research cruise back in April of this year. And it was seen by our ROV, ROV Sebastian, which is that robot I mentioned earlier, and its camera system. We've got a very sophisticated camera system. And it's believed to be the longest sea creature in the world at 150 feet in length. And it's essentially cloned, so it's a very long creature that's kind of cloning of itself, but acts as one creature in its entirety. So it's an amazing thing to see. We got some great video footage from the ROV Sebastian there, and it was a surprise. And well, actually, one of the things that really struck me about that finding this year in 2020, which has been a very unusual year, is that we've been going to see, humans have, and we've been exploring the ocean for, you know, centuries. And it's only in 2020 that we find a creature of this size. And it really shows how little we know of what's out there. And, what you know, who knows what else is out there that's longer or bigger, and we've just never seen it before.
Were you looking for this, or is this something you just stumble upon while the camera's going down looking for something else?
Could we see this in a live
dive? No, we just stumbled across it. Yeah, it was not an intended discovery. It was just serendipitous, really.
Yeah, the photo is this beautiful spiraling creature, thin, almost string-like creature.
Yes.
When you saw it, what is this? I mean, was this ever, this was never seen before, so you have to stop and say, okay, what is this? Is this a piece of rope, or is this an animal?
So siphonophores have been seen before.
Oh.
So these long, stringy creatures, but nothing quite as magnificent as this one in the shape. It's kind of like in a spiral. It circles in and around on itself. So, and also this length is amazing. That's never been seen before. Something that's this long and this intact. And it does look, you're right, it looks like you take a piece of spaghetti and you're playing with it on your plate and you swirl it around, and that's what it looks like.
Well, yeah, there's a photo of it and maybe video of it on the website. What is the website, by the way?
The website is schmidtocean.org.
Okay, schmidtocean.org. We got a couple more minutes. I do want to loop back to the Keeling Curve. $1 million in funding. How long does that last? And how can other people help maybe fund future efforts by Schmidt Ocean Institution?
Great, yeah. So the $1 million, that's the atmospheric measurements, plus $450,000 for the ocean measurements. So actually in total, it's $1.45
million. Mm-hmm.
And it's all of it, the ocean and the atmosphere, are for 5 years of funding. So, you know, we keep going till somewhere around 2025. And then how can people help? Actually, we, the Schmidt Ocean Institute, we would actually like you to be part of our journey. So to, you know, as I mentioned, we have a YouTube channel to come and explore the ocean with us and to learn about the ocean with us as we travel around. And you never know when we discover something completely new. I think this year alone, there's an estimated perhaps 40 new species. And we have our, you know, the scientists that participate in narrating as they go. And so when something new is seen, you can hear the excitement and, you know, in their voices as well. And you're with them on this trip. So we would love to invite people to join us and learn about the oceans and see how amazing it is out there.
It is. It's unbelievable the amount of knowledge that is yet to be understood about ocean and deep oceans. And and I wish Elon Musk would spend more time exploring the oceans than trying to explore space. Because there is so much value and benefit that we gain as a human species from better understanding the oceans and how sensitive they are and how linked we are to them. There's your plug, Dr. Vermani, to Elon Musk and Amazon.
That's
so
great. That's great.
All right. Well, we got to wrap up.
Thank you.
Thank you again for taking the time to talk to us about the Keeling Curve. And by the way, although it was the first, Charles Keeling started the effort, his son Ralph continues the effort, right?
Yes, that's right. Yes, so Ralph is based at Scripps, and he is continued the effort that his father started, and that so Professor Ralph Keeling and Professor Andrew Dixon is also involved on the ocean side, and he's one of the world's leading ocean acidification experts. So, yes, we're very fortunate that this is all maintained and is going to continue forward in a very robust manner.
Well, we look forward to chatting with you again in the future about even more new discoveries in the deep ocean and the work you're doing. Dr. Jyotika Vermani, the Executive Director of Schmidt Ocean Institute out of Palo Alto, California. Thanks again for joining us. We hope you enjoyed this episode of This Green Earth.
And if you did, we hope you'll take a minute to rate us, share us, and leave a comment.
You can email us your thoughts and ideas for future shows at thisgreenearth@kpcw.org.
Join us next week on This Green Earth.